So, how exactly do you store Infinity on a hard drive?
Well, the short answer is that you really don't. You can't.
Right. But today, we are exploring a massive paradigm shift that actually attempts to solve that exact problem. Welcome to today's deep dive. Whether you are, catching up on data theory on your commute or maybe prepping for a high-level engineering meeting, this deep dive is designed specifically for you.
Exactly. We're looking at a stack of research today surrounding something called the ODE-CCT framework.
Yeah, and our mission today is to break down a pretty radical reinterpretation of a classic mathematical tool. We're talking about the Fourier transform.
It's a huge shift. I mean, we are fundamentally talking about explaining how the Fourier transform can actually work as a generative function instead of just a massive static table.
Okay, let's unpack this because the core idea here is replacing infinite storage with just a few specific parameters.
Right, which is an absolute game changer for how we view digital storage overall. We're moving entirely away from the concept of a database as this static, explicit object.
So, to understand this ODCCT framework, we probably need to start with the acronyms, right?
Yeah, that helps. So ODE stands for ordinary differential equations.
Which, for those who need a quick refresher, those are just the underlying mathematical rules that describe how things change over time or space.
Exactly. Like the physics of a swinging pendulum or water flowing. And then the CCT part that stands for continuous collapse theory.
Continuous collapse theory, that sounds so sci-fi.
I know, right? But that second part is really where the magic happens. It's about collapsing this infinite continuous space of data into a tiny finite set of instructions.
Right, and to see why that collapse is even necessary, we have to look at the massive storage crisis built into the general Fourier transform itself.
Yeah, because if you are familiar with the Fourier series, you know it's used for periodic functions.
Things that repeat in a predictable loop, right, over a
Yep.
specific interval.
Exactly. But the general Fourier transform is way more expansive than that. It applies to non-periodic functions over an infinite interval.
Meaning from negative infinity all the way to positive infinity.
Right. Its whole job is to translate a complex signal from the time domain into the frequency domain. It basically reveals the constituent frequencies that make up a continuous signal.
But the problem, the real issue arises when you try to actually compute that mathematically.
Oh, it's a nightmare. Because the explicit Fourier transform is defined by an integral that spans across that entire infinite domain.
So when you run that transform explicitly, you get a result for every single possible frequency.
Yes, it literally spits out uncountably infinite points.
Like it includes every microscopic fractional frequency between 0 and 1, and then 1 and 2, and so on, literally forever.
Exactly. And historically, computer science dealt with this by just, well, by chopping the infinite data up into discrete, manageable pieces.
We sample it.
Right, we sample it. We accept a pretty significant loss of fidelity just to make it fit on a physical hard drive.
But the researchers behind this new framework, the ODE-CCT, they point out that treating the transform explicitly is just structurally flawed.
Right, especially if you want high efficiency. Treating it as an infinite array of points that we just try to sample is fundamentally the wrong approach.
I was trying to think of a good way to picture this, and it's like treating the Fourier transform explicitly is basically like trying to map the exact temperature of every single drop of water in the ocean.
Oh, that's a great way to put it.
Right. And then trying to write all those temperatures down in a giant spreadsheet. It's an infinitely large table.
You would need an infinite hard drive just to save the document.
Exactly. It's mathematically impossible to store and highly inefficient to even try to compute in its pure form.
And what's fascinating here is that the CCT insight completely flips that approach on its head.
It totally abandons the spreadsheet.
Exactly. The theory argues that we have to stop trying to store the output. We just abandon the infinite lookup table entirely.
And instead, we only store the instructions required to build it.
Right. We replace the infinite table with what they call a generative function.
The sources refer to this as the parametric transform.
Yes. So instead of logging an infinite function, like f of omega, we define it as a generative function that's parameterized by a finite vector.
Meaning we literally just save a handful of numbers.
That's it. Just a few parameters.
Wait, okay, I want to pause here because I know you, the listener, are probably thinking exactly what I was thinking. If I have a complex infinite signal, right?
Yeah.
And instead of a massive database, I'm only saving 3 or 4 numbers. How does the system possibly recreate the complexity of that infinite signal from just that?
It sounds impossible, but we can clarify that by looking at how the transform actually functions as a generative tool.
Right. The examples in the text are super helpful here.
They are. The sources provide these great examples of parametric frequency functions. So let's just consider a pure tone.
Like a continuous, perfect, never-ending sound wave.
Exactly. In an explicit table, representing that continuous wave requires an infinite number of data points over time.
Because it never ends.
Right. But if you treat it as a generative parametric transform, you only need to store exactly one parameter, just one.
The fundamental frequency.
Exactly.
So if the frequency is 440 hertz, which is like an A note on a piano, you literally just save the number 440.
That single parameter is all you need to generate the entire infinite wave.
Okay, but what about something more complex? Because a pure tone is pretty simple.
Sure, let's look at a damped oscillator. Imagine plucking a guitar string. And the sound slowly fades into silence.
Okay, so that's a continuous, infinitely decaying sound wave.
Right, and trying to represent that whole thing explicitly is a massive data burden. You're logging thousands of points as it gets quieter and quieter.
But parametrically.
Parametrically, you only need to store three specific parameters.
The text highlights these specifically. It's the amplitude, the fundamental frequency, and the damping factor.
Or the beta, yeah. Those three parameters represent the absolute core of the CCT framework.
And the framework basically divides every single system into two distinct components, right?
Yes. First, you have the stationary component. This is the underlying mathematical formula.
Like the integral kernel or the physical laws of the system.
Exactly. This component never changes. You don't need to learn it or store it as novel data. It is just the permanent structure of the equation itself.
It's basically the engine of the function.
The engine, yes. Perfect. And then the second part is the probability component.
These are your variable parameters, the fuel for the engine.
Exactly. So in the case of the damped oscillator, the fuels is just those three numbers. You store those three specific numbers, and you feed them into the stationary mathematical rules.
And it generates that infinite spectrum exactly when you need it.
You've effectively replaced infinite storage with a parameterized generative function.
Which is brilliant. And if this parameter-based generative approach solves the storage of infinite mathematical frequencies, I mean, it points directly toward a much larger, very real-world problem.
Oh, absolutely. The digital storage crisis.
Yes, because we are facing a massive digital storage crisis right now, not just in abstract mathematics, but in artificial intelligence.
Modern neural networks are basically the ultimate example of the explicit table problem.
They operate almost entirely on explicit weight storage. They are constructed out of unimaginably large tables of numbers.
Yeah, if you look at a large language model like GPT-3, it contains roughly 175 billion parameters.
You're 75 billion.
And in standard precision, storing those explicit weights requires about 700 gigabytes of data.
That's huge, just sitting on a hard drive.
Right. It is a massive bloated architecture. And the worst part is that entire 700 gigabyte table has to be loaded into memory just to generate a single sentence.
Which is so inefficient. But the researchers apply the exact same Fourier principle to these neural networks, right?
They do. They argue that we are currently treating an AI's memory as a giant explicit table. Just like the flawed approach to the Fourier transform.
And the ODE CCT framework basically says, hey, the weights inside an AI shouldn't be a table at all. They should be a function.
Yeah, exactly. Which introduces the concept of WFARC.
The weight function architecture.
Right. So instead of storing 175 billion individual numbers in a massive matrix, you define the entire AI model as a single generated function.
Here's where it gets really interesting, I think. You are fundamentally redefining the model's memory.
Yes. The knowledge is no longer stored in individual matrix cells. The knowledge actually becomes the mathematical relationship defined by a much smaller set of parameters.
It's so similar to how we compress a high-resolution photograph.
Oh, that's a good comparison, actually.
Yeah, like if you save an image explicitly, like a bitmap file, you are saving the exact color code for every single microscopic pixel on the screen.
Which creates a massive, massive file.
Right. But if you save it generatively, like a vector graphic, you don't save pixels at all. You just save the mathematical equations that draw the shapes and calculate the color gradients.
And when you open the file, the math literally repaints the picture on your screen.
Exactly. You save a tiny fraction of the data, but the mathematical rules recreate the whole image on demand.
And the source material actually provides four highly specific methodologies for how this generative weight function operates under the hood to shrink these massive AI models.
Right. Let's walk through this. The first method they detail is low-rank factorization.
Yeah, so let's break down how that actually works in practice.
Imagine we have a massive matrix of AI weights, say a grid that is 1,000 columns by 1,000 rows.
Explicitly storing that requires 1 million individual values.
Right, but with low-rank factorization.
You approximate that massive grid by multiplying two much smaller grids together.
Okay, how does that work?
Think of it like a matrix of 1 million users and 1 million movies, and you want to store every single user's rating for every single movie.
Which would be a trillion data points, impossible to store easily.
Exactly. So instead of storing the full table, you assign maybe 10 genre preferences to each user and 10 genre categories to each movie.
Oh, I see.
Now you only have two small matrices, a million users by 10 and a million movies by 10. By multiplying them, you can approximate the full trillion data points.
Wow. So in our AI example with the 1,000 by 1,000 grid, using a rank of 10 means you only store 20,000 values instead of a million.
Exactly. You use those 20,000 to generate the original million whenever you need them.
That immediately yields a 50 times compression just by storing the mathematical factors instead of the full table.
It's incredibly efficient. And the second method applies the Fourier concept even more directly. It's called Fourier-based weights.
So how does this one differ?
Well, here, you treat the grid of weights almost like a physical space or a landscape. You use Fourier basis functions, which are essentially mathematical waves, to map out the topography of that space.
So you aren't storing the grid at all?
No, you only store a few coefficients. And those coefficients interact with the mathematical waves to generate the full undulating grid of weights dynamically.
That is wild. And then the third method is the one I found incredibly fascinating from a pure architecture standpoint.
Neural generators.
Yes, or hypernetworks.
This one is very meta. You are basically using a tiny neural network to generate the weights of the primary neural network.
So you have an AI building the AI.
Essentially, yes. You might have a miniature generator network with just a few hidden layers, and perhaps 64 units.
Very small.
Very small. And you feed it a coordinate, like the row and column index of the massive weight matrix.
And the tiny network actually computes the exact weight value that belongs in that precise spot. It totally reminds me of procedural generation in video games.
Oh, like Minecraft?
Exactly. Like Minecraft or No Man's Sky. The developers don't save an entire infinite universe on the game disk. That would be impossible.
They just save an algorithm.
Right. And when your character walks into a new coordinate on the map, the algorithm generates the trees, the mountains, and the creatures for that specific location right as you look at it.
That's a perfect analogy. With a hypernetwork, you pass a coordinate to the tiny algorithm, and it generates the neural weight for that specific spot.
So a tiny generator storing perhaps 10,000 parameters can theoretically generate billions of weights on demand.
Exactly. And the fourth method is algebraic weights, which is perhaps the most direct application of the ODE concept we started with.
How so?
Well, you literally fit a known mathematical curve or an algebraic formula to the data distribution of the weights.
Okay.
So instead of storing the weights themselves, you just store the parameters of the curve, like its slope or its amplitude.
Okay, wait, I have to play devil's advocate here for a second.
Sure.
Because if you are generating weights on the fly, right, like calculating complex math or running a miniature neural network before the main AI can even begin its actual job, doesn't that introduce massive latency?
That's the obvious concern, yes.
I mean, if a processor has to generate 175 billion parameter network every single time I ask it a question, that AI becomes incredibly slow. It just totally bogs down the processor.
You're absolutely right. And that is the core trade-off of the ODE CCT framework. In the text, they define this as the CCT energy budget.
Energy budget. Okay.
Yes. You are entirely correct that this generative process requires computation. The fundamental rule here is that you pay with work, meaning computational CPU cycles, instead of paying with static storage space.
So your hard drive is practically empty, but your processor is doing significantly more heavy lifting.
Exactly. It's doing the heavy lifting to reconstruct those weights on the fly. You are trading gigabytes of storage for processing power.
But isn't that a bad trade if it makes the system too slow to use? We need real-time answers from AI, not a buffering screen.
Well, that's where dynamic fidelity comes in. The system is designed to be flexible. You do not necessarily generate the entire 175 billion parameter network at full 32-bit resolution every single time.
Oh, so it scales based on what you need.
Exactly. You adjust the generation based on your energy budget and the complexity of the task itself.
Okay, give me an example.
So if you were doing a low-stakes task on a mobile phone and you were trying to save battery, the AI generates a low-resolution, highly compressed version of its weights.
So it uses very little power and computes quickly.
Right. But if you plug it into a server farm for a complex medical scientific calculation, it spends the computational energy to generate its weights in full high-fidelity precision.
Wow. So it only generates what is needed at the exact resolution needed exactly when it's needed.
Which is incredibly efficient from a resource management perspective.
It really is. Which brings up a big question about implementation, because we already have these massive 700 gigabyte behemoths out there in the world right now.
We do.
Do we have to train entirely new models from scratch using this WFARC method to see these benefits? Because training models cost millions of dollars.
Thankfully, no. The source material addresses this exact issue with a process called retrocompression.
Or RCWFARC.
Yes. Yeah, you can actually take a fully trained, explicitly massive model that already exists and reverse engineer it.
How does that even work?
You run an algorithm over the giant loaded table of weights to figure out which mathematical generative function most closely mimics that specific table.
Oh, wow. So you are basically finding a compressed mathematical firmware for an existing pre-trained model.
Exactly. You take the explicit weights, apply one of those four strategies we just talked about, like low rank factorization or a hypernetwork, and you collapse the data down to its functional parameters.
And the empirical results of this retrocompression in the text are just striking. I want to make sure you, the listener, really hear these numbers, because it's wild.
The numbers are pretty undeniable.
They applied this process to a vision transformer, specifically a ViT-based model used for computer vision.
Right.
Explicitly, the standard model has 86 million parameters, which takes up roughly 344 megabytes of storage.
Which is pretty standard.
Right. But after applying generative retrocompression, they reduced the architecture to just 111,000 parameters.
Yeah, it's a massive drop.
The model shrank from 344 megabytes to 0.4 megabytes. That is a 775 times compression.
And it's driven entirely by replacing explicit data points with generative mathematical rules.
It's just staggering.
And the text notes similarly dramatic results for language models, too. They compressed a GPT-2 medium model, which was originally sized at 345 million parameters.
So about 1.4 gigabytes.
Right. The retrocompression reduced it to just 1.5 million parameters, bringing the file size down to a mere 6 megabytes.
From 1.4 gigabytes down to 6 megabytes.
Yeah. It's a 230 times compression. And crucially, at the lower compression ratios, the models retain up to 99.5% of their original accuracy.
So you lose almost no performance.
Exactly.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener? Let's zoom out for a second. We began today talking about the Fourier transform, which proved mathematically that trying to map out continuous infinite data on a static spreadsheet is structurally impossible.
Right. It just doesn't work.
The Fourier transform basically taught us that massive, complex data systems can't be efficiently stored. They have to be generated.
Exactly. You isolate the mathematical rules, you find your few specific probability parameters, and you generate the complexity on demand.
And by applying that continuous collapse theory to artificial intelligence, we are witnessing a foundational pivot in computer science.
We really are. Because as AI models scale toward trillions of parameters, brute force storage just becomes financially and physically unsustainable. We can't keep building bigger hard drives forever.
Right. We are moving from an era of storing static knowledge in giant databases to an era of generating knowledge on demand from highly dense functional parameters.
Which is a complete paradigm shift for the industry.
Mm-hmm.
Understanding this shift from explicit tables to generative parameters gives you a crucial lens for the future of efficient computing.
It really is the difference between trying to memorize every single sentence ever spoken versus just learning the grammatical rules of a language so you can invent the sentences yourself.
That's a beautiful way to phrase it.
And that actually leaves me with a pretty profound question inspired by this whole deep dive.
What's that?
Well, we are watching artificial neural networks learn to completely bypass storing their explicitly mapped memories. We are teaching them to generate their pathways on demand from just a few core mathematical parameters and coordinate inputs.
Yes.
And it makes me wonder, is that how human memory actually functions?
Oh, wow. That's a deep thought.
I mean, our brains do not have infinite hard drives. We don't store explicit, high-definition video files of our childhood.
No, memory is notoriously reconstructive.
Exactly. Are our own brains just running highly compressed generative functions, painting our past on demand from a handful of emotional and sensory parameters?
It definitely seems plausible when you look at it through this framework.
It's definitely something to chew on.
Absolutely.
Thanks for diving deep with us today.